Thanks for downloading this edition of The Why Factor, a programme that seeks to find out why we do the things we do. Coming up, part of our series on death and on life too. BBC World Service, I'm Mike Williams with The Why Factor.
Says, hi, Dad. It's late, for me anyway. I can't sleep because I'm thinking about coming up to Colorado to see you and Mom. Until a little while ago, I was looking forward to it, but I just realized that I'll have to say goodbye, and I'm not sure how to do that.
Today, farewell letters. What do we hope to achieve when we write them? And how can we find the words to say goodbye?
I always cry when I leave you guys, but this time will be hard, obviously. I'm not sure how to do it. Do I hug you quick and leave? Do I hug you and never let go? I can never let go in my heart.
Susan Geer set up the Last Goodbyes project online, collecting letters and hoping to inspire others to write their own farewells.
My father was dying of cancer back in 2011, and I was going to go visit him. I was laying in bed one evening thinking about, wow, what do you say to somebody when you know it's going to be the last time that you are going to see them? What profound thing can I say? What meaningful thing can I say? How can I sum up everything? And it was bothering me and keeping me awake. So I just got up and typed a letter and just started rambling about the things that reminded me of him, the ways he had impacted me, and just random thoughts. And I felt so much better. I haven't said nearly everything I want to, but I don't know how to get it all out. I know that you know that I love you, and that helps. The words are simple, but they mean so much.
Whether you're the one left behind or the one who's leaving, farewell letters can ease the pain of loss. They do different things for the writer and the recipient, leaving some kind of legacy, comforting the living, helping the dying with a kind of cathartic release. Sometimes, though, they can also create an unbearable burden.
My name's Joe Williams. I'm a First Nations Aboriginal man from Australia. I'm 33 years old. I've been a professional sports person for the past 15 years whilst living with bipolar disorder.
And in 2012, Joe wrote a letter to his children.
It was pretty much, it was a suicide note, really. And, I wrote the letters to my kids just to apologise to them that I couldn't be the father that I'd told them and I'd promised them I would be.
Can you remember where you were, what you were feeling when you wrote the letter?
I do remember it. I remember it like it was yesterday because I relive it in my mind every single day. 4 years on, it's still one of the deepest and darkest memories that I have. I remember that I wrote it with a black pen, not a blue pen. It's one of these things where what you wrote will never leave you. I guess now I'm lucky that I've survived through the other side, but it's the things that choke me up now and today is that what if my kids were to read that? People said to me about the actual incident, with you writing letters, surely you would have known about how they would feel then. I didn't know about what anyone would feel. I couldn't think about anyone else. All I wanted was the pain inside me to go away.
Just trying to see you in that very dark place.
Think of the most deafening, screeching, screaming noises that you could ever encounter, coupled with, a dark, scorching fire around you. It's like you're sitting on the edge of what you think might be hell. I'm a pretty resilient person. I've been for some 15 years of professional sport. nothing compares to no fight that I've ever been in the boxing ring, no opponent I've ever come up against in the rugby league field will ever compare to the demons I fought that day.
Why were you so keen to destroy the letter?
I didn't want anyone to see it. I didn't want especially my kids to see it. Thankful that I'm alive, you know, and it's by people seeing those letters, you know, I guess it brings on hurt for them as well. I guess that's not a hurt that I want them to carry.
A couple of days after my father ended his life, my mother actually found a letter in an A4 mathematics pad underneath his side of their bed. It was addressed personally to me.
Brendan McDonnell is from Adelaide, South Australia, and in 2007, when he was just 15 years old, his father took his own life. Brendan discovered the body.
Because it was addressed to me, I really took ownership of it and held onto it really tightly, and it was almost like Gollum with the ring in Lord of the Rings. I held on so tightly to this thing that sort of caused me a deep sadness.
It was your precious thing.
Yeah, I even remember a couple of days after it was discovered, a friend of my mother, I discovered her reading it, and I became incredibly angry because, you know, it was my letter. Basically, I completely shut up shop, as they say. I closed down completely. I was in silence for essentially 5 years. I just didn't want to deal with that emotion again, didn't want to feel that pain again of revisiting that day.
In the letter, Brendan's father talks about what he calls the doom and gloom that had taken over his life.
At the time, my father had been out in and out of mental hospitals, battling depression, manic depression, and for quite some time. I had absolutely no idea what was going on. Obviously, the doom and gloom he was referring to was mental illness. But this line really stuck with me and has really influenced me and had a profound effect. And I guess it's helped me find a sense of purpose, that purpose being to do all I can to stop the same doom and gloom that took my father from reaching others. So that's basically my job now. I run a mental health awareness and suicide prevention clothing brand and write on this blog. I guess you could call me a mental health advocate.
Joe Williams's experience has also led him to campaign on the subject.
It's something that we need to talk about within communities because we need to empower and strengthen our young people to realise that the answer isn't suicide. You know, there's ways out of those depths of darkness. I'm lucky enough, yeah, I've got a fantastic fiancée that knows that I'm having a bad day before I know I'm having a bad day. She's fantastic. And, you know, my kids are 11 and 10 now, so they're aware of when Dad's not having a good day. And they're aware of Dad's got bipolar disorder. I talk to them about feelings. Got fantastic support around me.
My thoughts on clothes. Emma's the best to take Laura for new clothes as the fashions change. Don't make her look older for her age.
Yeah.
Example, short skirts and too much makeup.
This is Carol Colclough from Stoke-on-Trent in England. 11 years ago, she was diagnosed with a cancer behind her eye and given just months to live. Carol's story featured in a TV documentary called The Mummy Diaries for UK's Channel 4. It explored the impact on families in which the mothers had terminal cancer. And Carol was encouraged to write a manual to help guide her youngest child, Laura.
If Laura's behaviour is bad, try not to shout at her. It only makes things worse. Stop and talk it through, and most important is to listen.
Laura was 7 then, now she's 17.
I can remember getting sat down in the room and her telling me that she might not be around for that long and that she might die soon, as blunt as it might sound.
Carol died in 2012.
One of the things I've been very struck by with talking with bereaved people over the years is just how there is something about your core identity and your self-confidence that is intrinsically impacted by the loss.
Julie Stokes is a clinical psychologist and founder of Winston's Wish, an organisation that supports children when a parent or a sibling dies. She encouraged Carol to write messages and to create memories for Laura.
I remember Carol wanting to really hold on to confidence for her daughter. And whilst she didn't want to write wishes that were in any way prescriptive for her, she wanted her to know that she had a mom who believed that she had a lot to be proud of and that she could follow her dreams, whatever those dreams were.
Well, when we were doing Mummy's Diaries, when we were filming that, we made a memory box in every single place that we went. So if we went on holiday or like just any little day out, we'd take little brochures or pictures and then write little tags next to them and put them in the memory box so I can always look through them and remember the good times and not the bad ones.
Do you still have it?
Yeah. I have it in the other room if you want me to go and get it.
I'd love to see it if you don't mind. It's big.
Yeah, quite a big box.
Big green cardboard box with lots of stickers on it and a picture of your mother.
And then I've got a little box here with little notes that my mum actually did write. So they're in like a little silver box with it says wish box on it, and then inside it says happiness, and they're on these little scrolls, little tiny scrolls saying different things that she wishes that I would like to do. So it says, I wish that you learn from your mistakes, but also learn to have great confidence in yourself. Love, Mum. I also have one which says, I wish that you always feel okay about sharing your feelings when you want to with people who you trust. And then lastly, I have, I wish that you always remember just how much Dad and I love you. Love, Mum. So I always just look at these when I'm feeling a bit down or having an off day. So it really helps me.
How does it help you?
Just to know that she's there and that she hasn't gone, like, forever.
Tell me what this box means to you.
It's like, I would say it's a little capsule of all the good times, just put into one. It means a lot to me. It's just all the nice memories and all put together, so I don't have to think too hard about them.
Letter writing can be so cathartic and healing. They can be helpful to the writer as well as to the recipient. And we've gone out and done workshops to help other people write letters because sometimes it can be daunting staring at a blank piece of paper and thinking, how do I sum up everything I want to say? And you don't have to say everything. But sometimes people just need a place to start, and then the ideas start flowing.
This is the Imperial War Museum in London, and if you come behind the scenes and up the spiral staircase, you reach a place called the Dome, the old reading room. There are books on the wooden shelves here about the Spanish Civil War, the First World War, the Second World War, but in the archive here, they also have things that are much more personal. Letters from soldiers home, soldiers who weren't sure they would survive the coming months and years. I've come to meet Anthony Richards, who's the head of documents and sound here.
What we've got here today are some examples of what we call last letters. Whether they were the last letters that a family would have received from a soldier who was killed, or whether they were letters written by the soldier specifically in the knowledge that he might be killed for the next day. So this one here, this is an example of a last letter. This was written by a soldier called Conway Jackson. And
just looking at the date here, the 23rd of September 1915...
And he wrote this in the knowledge that he was about to go into battle during the Battle of Loos, which opened 2 days later. And Conway was actually killed on the first day of the battle.
But so he died 2 days after he sent this, this letter. What did it say? Let's have a look at it.
My own darling mama, I got your letter and it has completely cheered me up. We are having lovely weather, but it gets cold at nights and winter is almost beginning.
So the interesting thing about this letter is that he talks about the importance of this prayer book.
Oh, I see. We have a little, a little kind of leather-bound prayer book here.
I was looking at the text for the 26th evening in Daily Light and thoroughly believe in it. It has given me new strength, and I'm taking no thoughts for the morrow, but trusting explicitly in Christ. If anything ever happens, you will know I was ready for it and went cheerfully and thankfully to meet my God.
How often are these letters designed to comfort those at home, do you think?
Very often. I think in a way they serve two purposes. One is exactly that, to comfort those at home and to kind of justify why they were fighting. But also I think they serve to help the writer themselves justify it to themselves. Because, you know, it's all very well to be sent into a battle, but you need to kind of have faith that you're doing the right thing. In a way, every letter has an agenda and it's written for a purpose. So in these examples, the message is very much, you know, don't worry, I'm doing the right thing, hope for the best, really.
They can be immensely comforting, these messages from beyond the grave. This one in a museum archive, and others in Laura's big green cardboard box with a photograph of her mother on top. Do you feel that she's still speaking to you in some way?
I think through the notes and the little stickers that she's put on stuff in the memory box, I think, yeah. I'll read them as if she's reading them. I can hear her voice in the back of my mind.
It's very powerful, isn't it?
It's really comforting. So, it's nice.
Thanks for listening to The Why Factor. If you'd like to hear more episodes, do visit the website bbcworldservice.com/whyfactor.